Welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Campbell. I'm a doula in Washoe County, Nevada, a Medicaid provider, a lactation educator, childbirth educator, and mom of 18. You can find me and connect on doulainreno.com. Remember, give a shout out to those who are brave enough to share their stories with us on how they have become parents. Let's dive in. Welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm the host, Jennifer Campbell, and I'm so excited. I have Dr. Liz on today. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm so excited to be chatting with everybody. So thank you, Jennifer.
I am really excited about this. Very different. I'd love for you to just jump in and start sharing your parenting journey.
Oh, okay. Well, I love that. My parenting journey actually started, 36 years ago. My husband and I've been, well, not 36, say 34. Four-ish years ago. My husband and I have been married 36 years. And
wow, congratulations.
Thank you. We've been together about 38 years. And I want to just kind of like preface this that I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and a connections coach. And for 38 plus years, I have been involved in the trade, so to speak, of marriage and family and all those issues. So I would have thought I was pretty well schooled for when we became parents. And that's so how you, I showed.
Yeah. You started your business before, you were licensed before. Okay,
absolutely.
Excellent.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Great.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. And it's been wonderful. I was a licensed marriage family therapist, met my husband in that journey. And then we started having our home, you know, the picket fence, we got our home, then we got married, then we had kids. Made everybody crazy in the small town from my parents' side of it. But we started off with daughter number one. And I want to just share my personal experience. And I appreciate that because some people think that because I studied this and studied it for a long time, that I would have had things down. I would have rolled straight through all of life's bumps. And I didn't. And in fact, I wanted to share one really funny one about, so we go and have our daughter and despite all my plans, you know, we're going to have a week off before she comes and then the house is going to be ready. Well, no, it went into labor the last day of my client load. After quite a while, we ended up having a C-section, emergency C-section. Oh. Yeah, it was okay. It was cool. It's funny, Lee, raising your hand, like, are they supposed to be moving? Can you feel moved in? And then I think she's stuck, you know, kind of thing. And so we go to that. So all my plans are derailed, right? And so we have a baby that nurses round the clock. No one explains about total exhaustion and being this, you know, hormonal mess. And so I really want to level set that whatever folks are experiencing, it's very real and it's very like normal, but you don't have to go out alone. And so one of these nights, the baby cries and I think I don't want to get out of bed. So here's where the little evil mini me sits on there. I'm not the nice therapist that says, let's talk about it. I pretended to be asleep and kicked my husband awake. Okay. And then I pretend to wake up after and he goes, I'll go get her. Right. And so, okay. Well, that worked one time. So I tried it a second time and it worked the second time. The third time, my husband quietly, he's so funny. He just says, I know you hurt her and I know you're kicking me awake. All you have to do is just say, go get the baby. I'm too tired. If I'm asleep, he goes, and so I said, okay. He says, you can't beat me awake again and you're going to go get her. I'm like, okay. Heels up. So that was my first like leap into the real realities of how kind of low or vulnerable I could be and break all the rules of like not communicating and not talking about it. But things got better and we had a second child and so I kind of learned from those experiences. My journey with children have made me a better person as well as a better professional. I know that a lot of the advice that I was giving BC before children wasn't as real and as helpful as it is now.
And I've heard that a lot interviewing for almost 7 years now.
Yeah.
You know, a pediatrician and anyone insert career option here, right?
Mm-hmm.
The second they have kids, they're not the same anymore. And I remember a pediatrician saying, now I understand why parents are asking me all the questions that they're asking me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
before kids, she felt like, why would you ask? Like, why am I the expert? Because there's no one else they're going to. You see your OB at 6 weeks, you
Oh,
get the
yeah.
okay. You have
Out the
no
door.
one to ask questions to. So I think I love that you were a therapist first and then kicked your husband. I mean,
It's
the joy I feel. Like
Yeah.
just
How low
because,
can you go,
well,
right?
because you
Yeah,
have
it's real.
skills that a lot of us don't have. By being a, having your doctorate and giving therapy to people. And yet when you become a parent, it throws everything off. And that's a
Yeah.
lesson I want women to hear that,
Please, yeah.
you are normal feeling thrown off. So you got it together, figured things out better, had your second child. Did that one go better?
Oh, it was so wonderful. We had a German midwife because
Yes.
we had moved different. She was wonderful. She checked me out and said, I'm going to send you back home. Go get a nice warm bath to have some scrambled eggs and orange juice. And I said, won't I throw up? She says, yep, we want you to throw up. Went back 4 hours of not even little labor, and out came baby, no meds, no Terry, no nothing, you know. And so that was a VBAC kind of thing in the world where they didn't do it.
Yay.
So she was wonderful. And so you think this is a perfect little child. Of course, this child slept all the time. The first day she got home, we're thinking, holy smoke. I woke up and she's like, 6 hours straight. Oh my God, baby's dead, baby's dead. You know, a panic. So I had a whole different type of child to raise. So that's what else I want to let people know, that just because we're in our situation, they're both daughters, they're very different
Yeah.
individuals. They came out in different, and parenting was different. And we think we got the first one because she's very engaging and wants to be out with people. And so her timeouts were very, very important to her. She wanted to avoid that. Our second one's like, hey, give me a timeout. Come get me in a couple hours. I'm cool. No, I mean, so she had to do timeout with the family, or you know, and so parenting is going to be different, and that's okay. And you're going to have different styles. My husband and I have much different styles in some areas, and then we have to come together. The key that I think that would be important for both men and you know moms and dads to hear, and I think grandparents in the area, is that one, it's something that the mom and dad get to decide on how it's going to be, but
Right.
it's important to recognize that me, like my husband, had a different style, and his style was actually better. Like sometimes playing and the roughhousing was actually better than like, oh, let's just keep everybody here because I don't want them riled up before they go to bed. Hearing coming up with a way for both parents to share their perspective on raising a daughter or a son, and I'll put a pin drop in that if that's okay. I'll come right back to it. But
Yeah.
each has different styles, and we want to throw those out on the table and talk about it. And if there's things that make you uncomfortable or bring up old triggers from maybe growing up, if that was like you thought, oh, that's too rough, and that's going to lead into something else, like tickling was a fun thing, and then sometimes some parents took it too far, and so maybe tickling starts to trigger somebody. So that's important to do that. I think it's also important to recognize that the gender of our children does potentially trigger things of self-worth or old hurts or I want to say undiscussed or even unknown expectations. I've seen some men like be harder on their sons than they are on their daughters. And I had one couple in particular we worked with, and he's already up into now, he's in the teens. And this stuff doesn't just go away, it just keeps morphing if we don't understand what's driving us. And what it finally came out is this gentleman was able to articulate, and they were working with me. He's raising a son, and he values the son being able to be a good partner for a future wife and for future children. And he wanted his son to know how to have good work ethics, how to save money, how to be safe and considerate. So he was pretty strict with his son about this area. And the wife was more permissive because she felt that he's only going to be young once. He needs to go like sow his oats and have fun. And so they had to really uncover those and then work together so they could parent their child really effectively.
I have two comments. One is, I think, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this. I think when people get together and get married and they feel like it's hard, it's a big transition. And I'm not minimizing that transition, but having kids,
It's fun, but it's different.
it can be, but you really, like you're talking about triggers and different parenting styles. And I feel like parenting brings things up you didn't even realize were there. And
Absolutely.
definitely the way you interact, it can change dramatically. And that's not a bad thing, but it's definitely, people are like, yeah, we've been married. It's great. We're gonna have kids now. Like that's the easier transition. And I think, no, you don't know what's gonna hit you. The other thing, when I was raising my kids, and I was never raised around, like I didn't have many uncles or grandparents. I did not have functioning male examples or cousins or anything like that, right? So I have my first boy, they pee all over you, and I'm thinking, so they're like,
Pepper,
they're just wired different. And I thought, if he has dolls to play with, like his sisters, and he'll learn sensitivity and caretaking. And he put his doll in a dump truck and slammed it against the wall, fell, hit his head in on the trim, and got stitches. And I was like, yeah, they're just not wired. They are not wired. This is not.
That's funny because my husband, when the girls were squabbling, goes, "Do they always scream like that?" Because I mean, again, he had brothers and sisters, but he'd never like been fully absorbed with all of the guys. Yes, they
It's so
do.
different. I was like, okay, I am very wrong on this whole give the boys a doll and they'll be sensitive caretakers. That's not necessarily how it works. They're very creative. Yep, smashed the doll in the dump truck and got stitches. But I mean, and the different personalities, like you said, two girls, same genetics, completely different. And so
Absolutely.
I had one of my girls, her time out was I removed books. And it was like you could not do anything worse to this kid. So you may have kids that say, you don't treat us the same. No, I don't, because you're not the same. The goal is the same, to understand consequence. Or but the consequences, absolutely not the same. Right. So it's good to know, like you have permission to do it differently because your child's personalities are so unique.
And you're not necessarily playing favorites or anything like that because you're easier on one. If one is more responsive to your redirect, and it may be because they're driven and they're to pay attention to that. They may, the other one that doesn't necessarily pay attention might have the ADHD, ADD kind of thing or not, or that just might be part of their internal decision making, and they're just not that interested in hearing and respecting your no. So yeah, they might have different harder con I want to say punishment or consequences or lose different privileges. And that's okay because children, and as they get older, they will actually get, read you probably faster than you are catching up. And so they learn how to play you or to split you and your husband. And we were talking like real deal stuff here. At one point in time, we started very quickly realizing that I had said no, and my husband had then said yes. He didn't know that, one of the kids had come to me first, and I said, "No, we can't do that because of X, Y, or Z." Had he known what I knew on the calendar, he would have had the same no. But they went to him. They come back. Dad said, "Yeah." And now, what's the first thing you want to do is get angry with my husband, right? Like, how could you do that? And then but I didn't. I just said, "Well, wait a minute. I got to talk to Dad." Okay. So the biggest thing is rather than assume. For this case, my husband was deliberately, trying to be the nice guy or something like that. I'm going to assume that they didn't know. That's a real important thing as we're having kids or any partner world is to try to keep score in the right way, to give your spouse, your partners, the benefit of the doubt and go have a conversation instead of a conflict. So I went over there and said, hey, you know, nice thing. I don't know. She just came to me and said, you said yes. I had already told her no. He goes, oh, really? She didn't tell me that. Okay. And I said, the reason I said no was because we have something else going on. You know, very early the next day, no sleepover kind of thing. That's what they want to sleep over. He says, oh, I gotcha. She didn't tell me that. So we quickly talked about our strategy and then we brought it back out to him and said, hey, here's the thing. If you go ask parent number one, and you get a no, then if you're going to go talk to the other one, you need to let parent number two know that you've already talked and the answer was a no, I need, like, you know, something else. Number two, if you don't obey that rule, you lose whatever it was you were going to get to go. It's a complete washout. And so we started having more of a collaboration, even to the point where he said that, hey, well, let me talk to dad and see what's going on. Or he said, hey, let me talk to mom and see what's going on. And we also would cue him up. Hey, have you talked to mom or dad yet? Yeah, they said, you know, so they'll still try. But I guess the biggest thing is we're going to be stressed. We're going to be tired. We're going to have too many things on our plate. We may be tapped out or touched out. And rather than attack and assume your, you know, your sweetie is doing this deliberately or they're a complete idiot or whatever it might be, let's just get curious, reserve judgment, and go from there.
Agreed. Okay. Yeah, you kind of have to set ground rules, especially when they're teenagers. I'm like, if you walk in from work, but I've been here all day, don't you dare ask dad. He has no idea what's been going on today. So some of it is accountability for the kids too, that they're trying to ask the parent they think they're going to get the better answer from.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. Which one? And if you ever want to play some fun games sometime, you guys out there, ladies in the world, or men in the world, sit down sometime around dinner table and say, which parent is the easy one? Or if you wanted to have seconds on, say, dessert, or if you want to do, you know, which one would you get? And they can tell you. Emma.
Yeah, that's true. Did you have more than two kids?
No.
Okay, so you had two girls. I want to move forward because you had already been a therapist and you told me it changed significantly after having kids. So if you want to touch on that, but I see, like, people can see in the show notes all the things you do, reconnecting couples, fulfilling communication, restarting sexy time. That's a big one, a big one. Yes. Post baby changes. Yeah. So you have, you're very geared towards parents who have somehow had a breakdown somewhere in part, at least, of their relationship and how to get that back. So I want to jump into how your practice changed from then to now, because you're doing some amazing things to help couples.
Oh, thank you very, very much. Well, I sort of cut my teeth type of thing on in the early years of really women and children. And I worked with a lot of abuse, custody evaluations and things. And I also had some men, but I've been doing this for quite a while. And in earlier time frame or mindset, men didn't necessarily gravitate towards the therapy world or towards, you know, they would willingly go, but it just wasn't that it, as much as now. Now I think I have at least a 50-50 call. Men will call and say, hey, I need help with my marriage. I'm not understanding what's going on. I have the men that pull out the list and go, yeah, okay. My wife says, here's a list that she, can I give that to you? That's what I got to work on. If that's what they're going, no, let's put the list aside. And what do you think? so my world has evolved with that. I think the biggest thing for me was realizing the shift from focusing 100% on my business and enjoying it. Being a mom and a parent had me want to change up the time I spent and how I was present with my family and growing in that respect. So the idea of continuing to create and grow and expand my business, because I already had other people working with me, we set that aside and really was more of me. And we had some really great adventures. We traveled with the kids and Had lived in Colorado. We've lived in Idaho with the horses and the critters. And so I think having walked this path, what it's done for me is realize that my passion is to get to people before they're trying to repair this disconnect. It's so much easier when, you know, you step on the scale and you're only 20 pounds heavier than you want to, than 60 pounds.
Yeah.
And so if we use that kind of analogy in the relationships, because mm-hmm. statistically right now, the average couple waits 6.9 years or say 7 years before they go get help. Well, 7 years
wow.
at the average is a lot of time of bad habits, nasty fights, feeling we've made a mistake, the kids experiencing this disconnect. Because remember, the kids are all eyes and ears, and they're seeing mom and dad give each other the cold shoulders or those kind of looks. They feel it in the house. I also talk to people about my parents, like, watch your animals. Do your animals, do the dogs or the cats, like, leave the room or they get suddenly get really clingy? Watch your little thing that, well, we never, you know, I don't pay attention to that, too angry. So that may be something that you want to look at. I had one couple that they brought their little two-year-old in, darling little girl, and she's in there just playing around quiet. And then they started cranking up on their fight. And all of a sudden, the little girl is going over and she's clinging to the mom's knee, just kind of looking around, but, you know, very, you can start to see that anxiety and that concern going. They're totally locked into the conflict. And so I said, let's just put a time out. Let's look and see, where's your daughter right now? What was she doing and where she's doing is now? And so it's helping people start to see the impact of even the timing of having that conversation. I'm not saying that conflict is bad. We do need to have conflict conversations. And that's one of the big things that I work with people in my couple Smart Restart. My focus is coaching and really getting to play on people's strengths. Those people's strengths are they loved each other, they were connected, they were invested in being better, they lacked skills. It was stuff that you don't get taught in school, all right? And even I went to school, remember, I'm the one that kicked my husband awake at night. and so I really realized. So we maybe don't have the right skills or we don't know how to apply them. And so when I'm working with couples, I get a real intimate glimpse into their world, and I help them come up with the strategies and the how do you have a timeout, how to stay connected, and how do you come back to one of those conversations and even find the time. And it's critical. So I guess my passion, we talk about this, is to get in front of as many divorces as possible,
right?
Many, you know, separations as possible. And just to start healing, because even I've seen even the most distant and disconnected relationships fall back in love with each other. It doesn't cost a lot of money. I think, you know, I've been talking about with my husband, like, when are we finding time to do stuff? And those, we look back and we miss some of the moments of dating more directly with ourselves. We had, and so I'm really working with folks about finding those little snippets.
It's so easy too to get sidetracked, because going on dates was huge, and I had been we'd both been divorced, my husband remarried and lost his second wife, and for me, I was like, the dating thing, we blended families, and dating is really important. And then it's easy to get off track, because we were so busy with work and kids that when we finally sat down alone on a date, I really wanted to verbally vomit all the things about the kids and him that I was struggling with. And we had a date once, and bless his heart, he's much nicer than I am, but
so's mine.
Yeah, so much nicer. People are like, oh, you're so sweet. I'm like, yeah, you didn't get the sweet one. But, you know, he said, we need to set boundaries on our dates and not talk about if there are things that we like need to quickly address with the kids because no ears are around, that's fine. But I don't want to talk about the kids, and I don't want to talk about a relationship. This is the time for us to reconnect. And I felt so bad, because you don't realize you're getting into this cycle. I was like, great, date night. I get to vent about everything that's bugging me.
Yeah.
And I said, I totally agree. And I apologize. But then we need to set aside the time that we can have conversations that are out of the kids' earshot, where we can have the conflict conversations.
Right.
And I said, I feel like this is the only time we have. So we did. We shifted things so that date night was fun and reconnecting. Mm-hmm. And any conflict conversations, we would sit in the car in the driveway.
That's beautiful. It's quiet.
So you need to figure it out, because you can get off track so easily and make something great become like a thorn in your marriage. Mm-hmm. And
And one of the trends that I see, you know, most folks do, and I don't think it's even a conscious thing, is that we only come to each other when there's a problem, right? So like in school, you're sitting in school and all of a sudden if they come to the principal's office, like, oh, what did I do wrong, right? And so that's how that dynamic plays out in relationships. So I have, when I work with couples, and I also have a free, it's a couples connection checklist, but it's three things to do daily, three things to do weekly, and three things to do monthly. And you can adjust it to things, but it's designed that we still keep a pulse on each other. And it's kind of like for you, it's like, here's what the kids did right, and here's what the kids didn't do right. And oh, we've got a plumber coming, you know, on Thursday type of stuff. And so that when I say, hey, let's talk, it's not going to be, oh boy, I'm in trouble now. What's she going to complain about? We've already had a pulse daily. And the daily stuff is also more importantly, hey, thank you. I love you. You're so sweet. That was nice of you to do the dishes. You know, all those little things. What do you need right now? And so we're trying to keep that positive flow, but keep the couples together and connected. And it's very easy to get disconnected. We used to like divide and conquer chores. One would run to Home Depot, one would run to the market, you know, but we weren't having shared experiences. We were knocking chores off the list.
Yeah.
And it's, and in time savers, I totally understand. And when you're also doing that regular contact, you can start to see if something's off with your spouse, your partner. I have a couple that just recently had a baby, and she's now working, and he's working from home, and he's watching their child. And he says, you know, you're coming home and just like, you're like, you know, you don't want to. And then we started talking. She realized she didn't have words for it, but he felt it. And I said, so you're all touched out. She says, yeah, I'm all touched out. I'm pumping at work. I come home and I feed the baby. I'm with customers all day long at work. And I miss that little bit of time when I just got to do what I wanted to do. I feel guilty if I want to like disappear for a little while because you've been with the baby all the time. And so we really started talking about what we feel and the facts and how the two of them can manage that. Kudos to this hubby that pointed it out 3-4 months into their child and her returning to work, so that it didn't build. And kudos to her for doing that true confessions about what she felt guilty about. And then, you know, with me able to like, hey, it's absolutely normal. You do feel touched out, and hubbies can feel neglected and be confused and not really know, because they haven't had their body go through these things. And so I think that's real helpful. One of the things that you talked about with your, and kudos to your hubby who said, we need to set boundaries, you know, talking topics, is that many of my couples have forgotten the fun of the early years and being that curiosity where everything was new and exciting. And so in both of my coaching programs, either with the Couple Smart Restart or I have a standalone Weekend Reconnect, the Weekend Reconnect is designed for, you know, I don't know, an ideal world where a couple goes away for a long weekend and reconnects and works on the marriage. That's pretty different than the average person's, at least my world was. And so I designed it for bite-sized date night topics. Mm-hmm. And so many of my couples will just grab the first thing and say, let's get better communication, or let's do my 3-3-3, which builds more appreciation for each other and also start to get some reciprocity going back and forth, helping me out. But they'll take the little video, like 10 minutes of me, and then the worksheet. And that's what they talk about. They work on at their dinner, or they go to a park and they're sitting here working on this. It focuses on the relationship in a positive way, mm-hmm. as well as uncovering some of those things. And that's been really, really beneficial for folks to say, how do I get started? We know we don't want to be like our friends mm-hmm. that are getting divorced, or that kind of talk behind each other's back about how bad they are.
Right.
So
I know you talk about love languages, which I mm-hmm. love. I love love languages. And we have, mm-hmm. we're both quality time, physical touch. I'm a complete mm-hmm. split. And he's a little bit more quality time than physical touch. But fortunately, we at least speak the same language. But mm-hmm. you're talking about this, and I am not words of affirmation. Like, I score zero mm-hmm. for gifts. It doesn't mean that I don't appreciate getting something. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the time you put in thinking about me, because I'm quality yeah. time. So, right. but I'm not words of affirmation, and still, and neither is he. But like this morning, I was driving in to work out with my daughter and son-in-law, and mm-hmm. I put on this like 90s hip hop station, and this song came on, and I texted him. He's white boy that raps, you know? And I was just listening to this song and thinking about you rapping. And it's one of my, like, I love it when he does it. It's one of my best memories. It's uh-huh. also a little sexy. And so I,
you, oh, good.
You, oh yeah, it's definitely one of those. I'm like, trigger. But even though words of affirmation isn't a big deal in our relationship, I love what you said about pointing out the things that are really positive. I could have just smiled and thought about it and never mm-hmm. said a word.
Right.
And I think we do that a lot. I think we're irritated when the barista gets our order wrong, and we're happy to let them know how they messed yes. it up. But mm-hmm. we don't say, hey, your voice on the intercom made my morning. Keep it up. We don't mm-hmm. take those 2 seconds to just give people that positive reinforcement. Mm-hmm. We're very geared negatively. And so I just want to reiterate how important I think that is in your entire life, whether you're at the drive-thru, in everything that you do, mm-hmm. and that we don't know what that person is going through or their stress mm-hmm. level. And like, who cares if your coffee's messed up? There's some things I just feel like we get really stuck on. And yeah. we should really let them go. And then our spouses, we're not telling them, oh my gosh, I was thinking about you rapping and I got a little winky winky in the car giggling to right. myself, right?
Right.
Who needs to know that? He does. He needs to know yeah. that. Right.
Absolutely.
So I love that you said that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just instant. It's free. It's fun. It's genuine. Mm-hmm. And he gets up like, oh, I still got it. Or she's just thinking about me. How neat right. is that? Right. And you, right. you don't have to be a big words, you know, affirmation person, but you can write little notes. Just little sticky notes, or put, you know, cute little stuff on the whiteboard. My husband is, he's a really good, quick artist. He's just hilarious. And so we have a little whiteboard. And when I would take the dogs for a walk, I would just say, hey, you know, take him for a walk, time I'm going. And I'd come back and he'd have, if it was really hot outside, he might have a little caricature of me, you know, sweating, or, you know, it'd be fun.
Right.
Or we use that. And I think it's important to say, put whatever little bits of joy, fun you can put into your world and your interactions. It's huge. There's something called red flags in couples. And if you're finding that, you could give me a list of 20 things or 10 things that your spouse does wrong all the time. But I said, what do they do right? And you pause and you struggle. You might be leaning over to that thing where your focus is on catching them doing wrong
yes.
instead of catching them doing right. And we got to shift that over. Because mm-hmm. We certainly wouldn't want to be doing that to our kids. We just wouldn't want people to be doing that to us. So let's start close to home. Right?
Yeah. And I think we need to make sure we do it with our kids, because parenting can be exhausting and hard and overwhelming mm-hmm. and all the things, you know, mm-hmm. and it's easy to feel that overwhelm. And then mm-hmm. Sierra, like, does she do anything right at 2 years old? Is she ever, is it ever going to be an easy moment? I don't know. And, right. and it, if we catch them doing things right, they mm-hmm. want us to catch them again doing things right. So our kids mm-hmm. respond. It doesn't mean that they're never going to do things that drive you crazy, but it does mean they like to be recognized doing the things that are right. And that's hard. It's sometimes you can have a hard day. It's hard to do with your spouse or your kids or Starbucks. I mean, like I'm not minimizing the challenge, but
I know 100% that I get on their nerves too, or got on their nerves too. Yeah. I mean, not the same, but those walks around goes like, oh, I do no wrong. I'm just perfectly nice. So recognizing that we can become abrasive or like, oh God, here she goes again in their lives. And so there's no harm, no foul in catching them doing good. And, or in there, even just in the words that we use, let's say they did something that there's a new thing out and they're supposed to be like wiping the crumbs off the kitchen counter. Let's say that type of thing. And they've been doing okay for a while, but then it's messy again. You might want to just say, hey, it's not like you. Okay. It's not like you to leave the crumbs out on our thing or to eat the last cookie without them. When we say something, it's not like you, what's going on? One, we're reserving judgment for ourselves, but two, we're helping them mentally see themselves in a better place.
Right.
Like, it's not like you to just, you know, text your friend and tell them, you know, to go whatever, like what's going on. And that opens some space instead of just coming in and attacking.
It could take a conscious, the words are powerful, and it really takes a conscious effort, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. I think parents need to realize that it's easy to say these things and following through on them. But I can tell you, I did an experiment with my kids. We had 10 kids in high school all at the same time. And I was on the phone with somebody and I said, I appreciate you. And my kids laughed at me. They're like, you tell people that you appreciate them a lot. And I'm like, let's do an experiment for 1 week. Mm-hmm. Every time a friend, a teacher, anyone does something that you appreciate, I want you to look at them and say, wow, thank you. I really appreciate you. Not that, not whatever. I want you to use that verbiage. And at the end of the week, they were like, holy cow, people light up when you look at them and say, thanks, I really appreciate you. And I'm like, yeah, now you'll never not say it to people because you just saw the impact that you made by doing nothing really. It took no effort for you to say that. So, I mean, I think there's a good, play some games, give yourself some challenges, have some lessons and see how people respond, because it makes a really huge impact in the life of someone else. And you don't know what they're going through, that those words might have gotten them through something. So, those are great conversations.
Right. And even like, look at your face and stuff like that. I remember when you shared that. I remember back in junior high, it was really tough making friends. Ooh, you know, maybe some of you guys can think that. And I saw this little article that said other people are just as concerned or just as lonely or just as whatever, worried, scared type of thing. So just smile. So I did one of those experiments. I smiled. I just walked down the hallway and smiled. And all within a few days, the same people that were walking in the halls would smile back at me. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. And so if you translate that even into your home, maybe you're coming in and you've had a really long day or you haven't had a sleep. What's your face saying? Do you smile at your partners? Do you smile at the kids? Do they, you know, that even that facial stuff can help lift the mood or have people start to respond to you differently. I know we're going to chat, wind up pretty soon, but there was one really smart lady and she had 4 daughters. And she said, I'm so tired of, I walk into a room and they're like, why are you mad, mom? She's like, I'm not mad. I'm mad, I was happy and stuff. And then she got to thinking, she went and looked it up. She had all these wrinkles on her forehead. And so she quietly went and had Botox. And she said, I'm just going to do a little experiment. She's like, I've never done anything like this before. So the wrinkles disappear, walking in the same mood. And like, hey, mom, how are you doing? And so she gave it a try. And she says, do you see what's different? She says, why? I said, I'm the same person I was last week. But why are you? Well, you're not mad anymore. She said, what's my wrinkles?
They're my very focused wrinkles. I'm very
And that was she was, yeah, she was very, she was a very intense woman, but she wasn't mad at all. And so she was like concentrated. And I give her credit for having four daughters. Hats off to you, 10 kids. And that's a lot of moving targets there.
We have 18, but we're not going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about that. I want to wrap up by saying in the show notes, you have three freebies for couples to utilize and a free complimentary phone call. Can you end by kind of sharing what that phone call looks like?
Yeah, actually it's a Zoom call. So they see me like this. Okay. And so what they would do is just grab the link, look at the calendar and find a day and time that works for both of them. They'll get on and there'll be a little information that they can give me some background. So I kind of know what they're wanting and what the struggles might be if they feel comfortable, but that helps me. We'll sit in there and we'll chat and I'll help them come away with some strategies that work for them. That they can do a takeaway. Maybe they're having like the issue with the kids going, you know, dividing the parents or parents can't get on the same parent. Anyway, we'll talk about that and I'll give them some strategies that they can try and work with. And, you know, then also if they want to learn more about working with me within my coaching programs, where they get the one-on-ones and we have WhatsApp and they have the weekend reconnect, all those things, we can chat about that too. But it's really there. My goal again is to be available and help people get ahead of the divorce or ahead of thinking, well, this is the best we can do. And this is what long-term relationships look like. We just grow apart and we hate each other and the kids go, no.
Okay. So much more fun.
Yeah. So it is truly complimentary and we'll spend 30 minutes in the Zoom and they can be together on the call. Or they can be in the same location or they can be in separate locations. It's cool. And technology is wonderful.
Dr. Liz, thank you so much for sharing your story and all of your information. Oh, it's been really fun.
We're going to have to catch up. I'm going to have the 18. Good Lord. I see a Disney movie or something like that.